Yeah, and you need that. You omitted about 90% of the detail that he needed to do his job. It wasn't his fault, it's yours. You didn't give him everything he needed. Oh, you're right. So that's where we also go wrong. We look at the main line of the story, but we forget everything on the periphery.
Welcome to Embracing Digital Transformation, where we investigate effective change leveraging people, process, and technology.
This is Darren Pulsifer, Chief Solution Architect, author, and most importantly, your host. On today's episode, we're going to continue our conversation with Dave Burrell and talk about the lost art of the business analyst. Interesting. So if I am a business analyst and I'm trying to get the requirements out of a SME, I have to dig. I have to deep. Really dig deep.
Yeah, you can't just ask one set of questions. They won't be able to come up with it.
So the fact that we rely on SMEs that have metadata, I say, mm-hmm. I'm thinking data, right? Mm-hmm. I have internalized this data. I can describe how the big picture fits together very well. That's one of my superpowers.
Right.
But when you get down into the details, I need someone to prompt me so I can pull that information back out.
Because
it's not sitting in the frontal cortex anymore. It's not there.
It's buried quite deep. Yeah. And if anybody wants an illustration of how this works, think of something very simple that we all go through all the time. You've known how to tie your shoes since you were 5, right?
Yeah.
Can you imagine describing that so a computer could do it?
No, absolutely not.
You don't even know where to start.
I had a hard time teaching my own kids how to do it. Yeah.
You computer? Don't even know where to start.
Yeah, no.
Right? We do it lights out.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it happens all the time. We just don't get it.
All right. So we've talked about requirements and the knowledge thing. I've heard that concept before. The brain can only really work on 5 to 7 pieces of information at the same time,
mm-hmm.
in a diagram. That's why when I see these architectural diagrams that have hundreds of bubbles and things, I'm like, no one can understand all that. There's no way.
No, they can't.
We were always taught, 5 to 7 subsystems per layer.
Tops.
That's the only way you can really do things. Understanding that, what other things have you observed on why we've had failures? Or is that it? That's the crux of it.
I think that's certainly the big one. There's sort of another derivation or another flavor to this. I won't name names, but I will pick on a good friend of mine. This, too, is one of the brightest guys I've ever met. He was the National Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year several years ago. So, I mean, PhD, MBA, really bright guy in electrical engineering. And he had done multiple startups in the hardware business, in the computer hardware business, particularly in and around the areas of solid-state storage. And he had a startup that was working with 5 different verticals, which was unique in and of itself. But because of his very extensive relationships, he was selling worldwide right out of the gate, which just doesn't happen.
Oh, that's crazy.
He wasn't doing the normal sort of things like a flash card for a camera. Right? He was doing things like housing the Nap of the Earth instructions for a cruise missile. And then what happens in the event that it's lit up by radar so it self-destructs so the enemy couldn't get it? I mean, much more sophisticated stuff. So he needs this pipeline management system because his projects typically take, about a year to run through the pipe. Fast ones maybe 9 months, slow one could be 18. So he finds this VAR. Again, won't name technologies because, I mean, the goal here isn't to shame anybody or embarrass anybody. It's just emblematic of what happens, right?
Yeah.
Right? It's just learning. So this guy says that he can do it, in a side of a month for, fairly limited amount of money. 7 months later, for 7 times the original amount, the guy's nowhere close to being able to do what he needs to do. No end in sight. He calls me, yelling and screaming about this guy who he's quite sure is a crook. And ultimately, after he kind of vents for a while, he says, you know, could you look into this? I know you do this, you know, just check out and see what's going on. He goes, what would you do first? I said, well, did you ever make sure that what he's trying to build is what you want him to build? And he said, well, we talked about it. Yeah, you can, yeah, you're already laughing. You know where this is going, right? And I said, no, no, no. Everybody's mind's eye is different. Unless you get it down on paper, you do not have agreement. He said, well, no, we didn't do that. So would you talk to the guy? So I spent literally 2 hours with this guy and mapped out the cheesiest, simple diagrams as to what the workflow and the management roll-up would be on this requirement. And workflow was pretty clean, but the roll-up looked a little funky, and that was where this guy was having trouble. And, you know, I knew that my buddy was the type that it's almost impossible to get his attention, so I took him to lunch, and I sat down with these two pieces in paper in front of him. And I said, so is this is what he thinks you wanted to build. Is this right? Let's do the workflow first. I said, yeah, yeah, work that pipeline. That's right. I said, okay, let's talk about the roll-up. Is this right? He said, yep, that's exactly what I told him to build. I said, great. So how would you show me on this diagram how you would handle a difference between a corporate and a regional account, which is where he's hanging up? And the guy looks at it, and he says, oh, I can't. It's not on here. I said, ah, so this isn't right after all. So we literally spend 4 hours asking questions and answering them, and I'm drawing stuff on an illegal pad to finally come up with the most convoluted, exception-laden management hierarchy and reporting roll-up that I've ever seen. Ever. And at the end of it, when we finally got it right, and forgive some minor vulgarity in this thing, but this guy's a close friend of mine, so I can get away with it, said, you dumb son of a bitch, you've got nobody to blame but yourself. You told him you needed this. Yeah, and you need that. You omitted about 90% of the detail that he needed to do his job. It wasn't his fault, it's yours. You didn't give him everything he needed. So, oh, you're right. So that's where we also go wrong. We look at the main line of the story, but we forget everything on the periphery.
So to be an analyst then is not, it's not a secondary, tertiary role. It's a primary role.
It absolutely is.
And we I think that's maybe where the problem is. A lot of times we go, well, that person's okay at what they do. Let's put them in as an analyst. We'll just do that. But it requires certain skills because I've seen that and I've done that myself. Mm-hmm. I have. Right. And two of my children are product managers, which is really a business analyst. Right?
Well,
with
a much more sophisticated business analyst, yeah. I would say.
Yeah. But they're not deemed like you are. They have to be the type of people that can probe and pick and find details out. And really read people in a lot of respects, right? Because we have, like you said at the very beginning, we have in our mind what we think something's supposed to look like.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a hard time articulating that. If we're a subject matter expert, it's because we've pushed that back into our mind. If we're not a subject matter expert, maybe we don't know what all the boundary conditions are, or maybe we don't have enough experience to know everything that we want. We just have an inkling. So these business analysts have to be able to probe and go deep.
They do. Yeah. There's a couple of things that we do to sabotage our efforts right out of the gate. You know, one of them is calling things an IT project, like, you know, I alluded to earlier.
Yeah, I like that.
The second you do that, you've made two fatal mistakes. Number one, you've given the business people license to abrogate responsibility for the project.
Yeah.
Because they're the only ones who know this stuff, right?
Yeah.
And if they think, oh, it's an IT project, it's their problem, it's not mine. So I'm not going to worry about it. Let them deal with it, right? I mean, everybody's busy, so they're not going to try and spend any more time on it than they absolutely have to. So number one, they've checked out right out of the gates. They're going to give you as the least amount of time that they can possibly get away with. The second issue is that you put on the IT team, the tech team, responsibility for making decisions that they're not equipped to make.
Yeah.
How many times in your career have you heard it's usually a junior engineer who makes a statement, I know more about what the business needs than the business does?
Oh, yeah. I've seen that. I said that.
All right. It's a familiar refrain, right?
Yeah.
It's just possible that I've made those same statements in my ignorant youth, right? What you realize now is that when you make that statement, you've done two things. Number one, you've demonstrated your arrogance because you think you know more about a system than somebody who's been doing it for 20 years when you've spent 2 minutes on it.
Right.
You've also demonstrated your ignorance because you've telegraphed to the universe that you have no idea what questions you need to ask to be able to get the information that you need. Right?
Yeah. You hit it right on the nose.
It's an interesting position that we find ourselves in, right? So there's a lot of bad habits that we kind of need to break. Yeah, and you know, those being a couple of them.
Yeah, no, this is fascinating. So it sounds like some retraining or some additional training for business analysts. It sounds like also some process change in my organization to do things more upfront on the discovery or assessment of the problem. This sounds very much like traditional waterfall development.
I always get my knickers in a twist when somebody says that.
Yeah, but yes,
it is a logical response. But the issue is, this methodology's development model agnostic. It doesn't matter if it's water or agile.
Like that.
It doesn't matter. Look, you're understanding the business. That is very different from how you develop software. Right, the most successful enterprises out there, in companies like Chubb and Nestle and JPL come to mind, or organizations like that. JPL is obviously not a company. They've sort of followed this hybrid agile model that assesses what needs to be done first from a business perspective. They plan, and I'll explain what planning means. Then they develop it. And then they refine from there. So they develop an MVP, implement the thing, and refine from there. Have you ever read Bent Flybridge's stuff?
No.
You know who that is?
No, I haven't.
So this guy is the world's leading expert on large projects. He's a professor at Oxford University. He's been retained extensively by McKinsey & Company and a host of others. He's got a book out now that was published in April of 23 called How Big Things Get Done. Anybody hasn't read it, I strongly suggest
strong,
you do.
Strong recommendation.
Strong recommendation. The basic idea is what he lays out is there is an enormous difference between planning for project management and planning for project solution. They're two different things.
Yeah.
True planning for a solution is prototyping the solution, storyboarding, coming up with process maps, workflows. He uses illustrations from software creation to Pixar doing movie scripts. And that was one of the most fascinating things that
I've seen those studies before,
right. It was brilliant. Pixar creates their movies. They have this incredible track record of success because they put together this massive PowerPoint deck and a loose script, and then they had the people around the audience read the script. And then they'll show it. Then they'll play this, rough cut storyboard movie to about a dozen people. They go, no, I like this. I don't like this. Change this. Tweak it. Refine the deal. Then they go back and do it again. And they'll do this about 8, 9, 10 times before they finally get the script all locked down in these storyboards. And by the time they're ready to go, they flip it over to the graphic artist and the true talent who record, you know, does the voiceovers, and they've got a movie ready to go. So his whole point is that you need to think slowly and act fast, which is what we do.
Think slowly and act fast.
Think slowly and act fast. So think it through slowly. Understand what you're trying to build. This is one of my favorite lines and kind of a pet peeve. I worked my way through college doing construction. Nobody in their right mind would turn to a contractor and say, build me a house, unless you had unless you had first spent months, maybe years, with an architect and an engineer figuring out exactly what you needed to build before you tried to build it. And yet for some God unknown reason, when we get to something like software that you can't see, you can't touch, you can't physically manipulate, we think that all we need to do is, hey, I need a system, go do it.
Yeah.
Doesn't really make a lot of sense.
I like what you're saying then, because what you're talking about is fundamental principles.
Correct.
That we need to get back into, because I felt like we've kind of regressed since the 80s and 90s. I thought there was really good process and there was professionalism in business analysts and there was a lot of requirements gathering and deep diving and things like that. But when Agile came in, it was like, woo, I don't need to do any of that. And people stopped doing that important principle and said, well, I'll just iterate quick.
Right.
And you just keep iterating and iterating without the deep analysis that could go along with it. So I love how you made this principle-based, and we can still use the different methodologies. Because there's a lot of value in Agile, a lot of value.
Absolutely. You can't possibly know everything up front.
Yeah, exactly. So, but what you're really talking about is still working
it's an iterative
on that
approach.
Analysis muscle that we've kind of just let atrophy abandoned over the last two decades.
There was a YouTube video that came out probably a year or so ago now. God, and I'm forgetting the guy's name. You know, there were 17 guys that were authors or signers of the Agile Manifesto.
Oh, yeah, I know. I know three of them personally.
Right, during that famous Scotch and Ski weekend in Utah, right?
Yeah.
And one of the guys, I wish I could remember who it was, who's now our age or older, and he came back and he said, you know, he was saying exactly what you just said. He said, when software development got going, if you looked at the demographics of the people who were doing it, they were much older, by and large. You know, a lot of these people were, you know, 40s and 50s. The demographic, there were an awful lot of women doing it.
Yeah, there were.
Right? So a lot more women than there are now. He said, now we're in a situation where you've got almost exclusively young males in their 20s.
Not very detail-oriented by nature.
He said, exactly. He said, the one thing we know about young males is they're not particularly good at planning anything. And so his whole point was, we've got to reintroduce that discipline of, there's a difference between understanding what you need to build and the way that you go about building it. And it's okay to take your time to understand what you're trying to build. I've seen so many people get in an uproar about, oh, you're trying to go back to a waterfall. No, I'm not. I'm not suggesting that at all.
No, you're going back to some of the things that the waterfall method forced us to be good at. Yeah, and we've lost that. Even though I think the Agile method is the right direction forward.
I agree. I completely agree.
The skills that we've now let atrophy. I think that's what we're seeing.
What people tend to forget, and you and I are old enough to remember it, the first and most successful Agile project of all time was the moonshot.
Yeah, you know what? When you put it that way, yeah, it kind of was.
I grew up in Huntington Beach, California, which was the bedroom community for the Apollo project. It's kind of what it boiled down to. The third stage of the Saturn V was built a mile from my high school. The second stage was built about 3 miles away. The command module was built about five, maybe seven or eight. But half the dads on my street were Apollo engineers.
Wow.
A good friend of mine's uncle was the engineer that came up with the schedule for Apollo 11. And he's very proud of the fact that if you adjust for the fact that they had to move the landing site by 200 miles because there was a typhoon in the area, his mission schedule was off by 3 seconds at splashdown. Not bad, right?
Not bad.
But when Kennedy said we're going to go to the moon, we had a grand
total. We hadn't even launched a rocket yet.
Well, we had, but we'd never been in orbit. We had a grand total of 15 minutes.
Rockets were blowing up. That's what was going on.
All the time. We'd done the glorified equivalent of shooting a man out of a cannon.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was about it. So we had to figure out how we're going to get into orbit, how we're going to get out of orbit, how we're going to keep multiple guys alive in a spacecraft for 2 weeks, how we're going to find each other in outer space, how we're going to dock and undock and navigate, and then how we're going to leave low Earth orbit and make it to the moon and get into lunar orbit. When I say it was an agile program, we literally knocked down every one of those requirements individually.
But we didn't know all the details up front.
Do we now?
You would think we would, but we still don't seem to.
We don't. In an enterprise, we don't.
No.
The world's always changing on us. So that's okay. But they knew what they were going to do before they did it. They understood what the requirement was before they went out there and did it. At least they usually knew what the requirement was before they did it.
But not when they first started, which I think is the key point here.
Right.
They had to build some things, try them out, and learn more about the requirements.
Correct.
It truly is amazing. When you look back at how fast they were able to move.
It's stunning.
It truly is amazing.
Yeah, it's absolutely stunning. I mean, one of the things, too, that we've really significantly underestimated is the value of checklist. You know, there's a very famous picture of Buzz Aldrin on the moon where he's got his left arm cocked up at a weird angle. And he's looking at his checklist. And that checklist was the culmination of 500,000 other checklists over the prior 8 years that people had used to get us to where we needed to be. And for those who don't know, Buzz was a PhD from MIT who was the guy that figured out how to rendezvous in space. If he needs a checklist, what does it say about us?
Yeah, the rest of us do too.
Right? About us mere mortals.
This goes back to being able to only comprehend 5 to 7 things in our head at a time.
That's right.
Yeah. So, hey, Dave, this has been wonderful. This has been wonderful talking. We could probably go on for more hours and hours, but we're out of time. It's been great. Any last words for our listeners if they want to hear or listen more? To you, where can they find out more information about you and your organization?
You can go to the website. It's bridgingbusinessit.com. If you want to understand a little bit more about what we do, how we do it, it's on the website. There is a link on the media page to a talk that I gave to PMI at the Global Summit in Las Vegas that talks a lot about the neurological impediments to conversations that we have. You can reach me at dave@bridgingbusinessit. If you want to get a hold of me, give me a call.
Thanks again, Dave, for coming on the show. This was wonderful.
Thanks for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you for listening to Embracing Digital Transformation today. If you enjoyed our podcast, give it 5 stars on your favorite podcasting site or YouTube channel. You can find out more information about Embracing Digital Transformation at embracingdigital.org. Until next time, go out and embrace the digital revolution.